that is the major concern we need to have in a foreign policy area. So all of us must fight that to the extent that we can, try as graceful in a way as we can, in a proper way, to get our friends in this hemisphere, which speak to Latin America alone, in government, in business, and the rest, to realize that that is a very dangerous game for them. Let me put it another way. We have $16 billion now in troops. Kevin Blogg, he was a fashion UN, came to say that without the Latin countries, we couldn't stay in the UN. That was true then, but it's not true now. At the present time, we have to realize that they may need us more than we need them. Now, the point that I make is not in terms of that is gradually dawning on a considerable number of people in our Congress and the rest, that we cannot, we want to be there, we will be forthcoming, we're a big country, we can take a few kicks in the face and so forth and so on. And all of us in positions of leadership will sort of brush them off and say, ha-ha, we understand. But I can tell you that when you get down before this Congress, it's rough. It's rough as a cop. Expropriation and the rest, they want to play that game. In fact, the tendency to Congress is to be more rigid rather than less on it. That's our problem today. Let me try to put it all in perspective in terms of the world seeing how it is really going. Because you don't leave any impression into it. It's all that pessimistic as it is. I was thinking how much has happened here in November of 1969, is that right? Yeah. And I think sometimes we lose perspective because of current problems that we may have and so forth in the international field and other things. But in November 1969, at the time we were meeting, I mean, the date that weekend, there were 300,000 demonstrated about this White House wall that long, I remember, and that was allowed to. And we had we were losing approximately 300 a week until the National Vietnam had 500,000 men. They're stationed there, and a few of them so forth and so on. We were in negotiations, we had no contact with the Chinese. Latin America, they were not much. If you think of how much the world has changed since then, so it should give us no cause for euphoria, but a cause for hope. We live in a potentially very dangerous world. The reason I mentioned, for example, how different the situation is now with regard to Latin America from a national security standpoint from what it was at the time of World War II, is the advent of the nuclear weapons. We have to face it that there's not going to be any conventional war between superpowers again, never. It'll be done in 30 minutes. So the world having changed that way, the leadership here must move to deal with it. So we look at what the situation was then, but what it is now. Most of the American people, of course, look only or primarily at what happened in Vietnam, and they're pleased that all of the Americans are out of Vietnam, our prisoners of war return, and there's no draft. No draft for the first time in 25 years. We're very pleased with all that. But that misses the larger picture. Far more important, the war in Vietnam was nagging, difficult, hard to break, and so forth. But far more important than that moment, which we think was a very important, was what we have done to change the whole world. And not to eliminate the danger of war, but substantially reduce it, particularly between the major powers. That's what the China initiative was about. It was a very important initiative that many has read it and still do. They think, isn't it great that finally the communists in China and the anti-communist president of the United States finally get along and had a nice little handshake? It has nothing to do with it. Certainly, we are talking. What it has much far more to do with it is this, that I, as the president of this country, looking down the road, could not allow the leaders of one fourth of all the people in the world, with the potential of becoming a massive economic and nuclear power, which they are not today, but being Chinese, not because they're communists, they can do anything. We could not allow that situation to evolve, so that 15 or 20 years from now, whoever is sitting in this spot is not a communication room. And so we moved, and we have a new relationship developing that, a very important, it's rather curious that China, the PRC, at the present time, of all the major nations in the country, the United States, with whom we do not have diplomatic relations, except this office we set up with Bruce there and the man here, we are their best friend. So, that's happening. The other thing, of course, is see for a week, the meetings with the Soviet Union were in Moscow were very important. A number of important agreements were signed, cooperation in space, science, technology, and environment, and areas that you don't need to look at. Any one of those agreements would have appeared to be quite important a few years ago. But of course, overriding all of them is the first step in the location of nuclear arms. We had to make their weapons. We had to negotiate a treaty on that, and now we're moving on the offensive side. One point that I wish to make is that what is far more important is that the United States and the Soviet Union, each of which has the power to destroy the other by just pushing one button. The United States and the Soviet Union are now in a position where we are negotiating and where we are not agreeing on everything. Breaking up is deeply believed in communism, and I deeply believe in, shall we say, capitalists. On the other hand, we're both very pragmatic, and we recognize they need us for other reasons. We don't need to go into those. But we recognize that these two giants in the nuclear field have to find a way not to rub against each other in critical areas of the world and run the risk of explosion. And so we are finding that way. All of this has happened since 1969. And we'll have a week to 10 days of very intensive discussions on this here. We will have some rather important announcements to make. But far more important than the individual announcements will be the fact that there is at all. The fact there is communication, because that means there is a substantial reduction of the chance that if they make a move, for example, committees, if they have chin waves or something like that, that we allow that to escalate into a nuclear crisis. Just let me digress for a moment. The reasons for these communications of the Soviet Union today being approximately equal to the United States in terms of nuclear capability, China 15 years from now being equal to both in terms of nuclear capability if they want. Put yourself in the position of whoever is president of the Soviet Union and calls a secretary of the party of the Soviet Union or president of the United States and what your foreign policy is. We have to realize in the present time. And you can add a few million or subtract, it doesn't make any difference, but if because of a move on the committee for Berlin and the rest, the President of the United States decide that, we will have to react. He would have to react with the knowledge that his decision would result in the deaths of probably 70 million Russians and 70 million Americans. If the Secretary General of the Soviet Union, Mr. Brezhnev, should make such a decision, he would have to recognize exactly the same thing. Now, it is that fact that hangs over the world that makes it essential that whoever sits in this chair do everything possible to reduce the danger of any kind of conflict. With the Soviet now, with the Chinese later, and of course, balancing each against the other. Now, if I could go on for a moment, looking at other parts of the world. But what we have to realize, too, at this time, and I say this with you all, those who are not here, city and the Congress to move towards a new isolationist. And because we have had such success in reaching some accommodation in the Soviet Union, have had some success in opening to China, have had great success in ending the war in Vietnam and in Iraq, people just say, isn't that great? Now we've got peace and it's lovely and the world's changed. So we've got $10 billion of the defense budget. Let me say, that would be changing the game plan when it's working, and it would be a disastrous mistake. The defense budget today is 1/3 in real dollars of what it was 4 years ago. We can cut it more, but we're going to try to negotiate a new nuclear agreement with the Soviet. We're going to try to negotiate a mutual reduction of forces in Europe this fall. I can assure you, though, in all these business numbers, if the Congress, prior to the time to negotiate, says, regardless of what you do, we're going to cut $10 billion out of ours, get it. You try to look across the table to Mr. Gresham and say, well, look, we've already cut this much, so shouldn't you? And you just say, well, why? It's cold, I can assure you. Nothing is done in this field because of love. It's all done because of respect, sometimes fear. In other words, if we are going to be able to play a role in reducing the burden of armaments and reducing the danger of war, the United States must maintain strength until we get mutual reduction. Mutual reduction. Otherwise, there will be no reduction. Otherwise, what will happen? No reduction on their part. Because if you have a situation where the United States reduces, say, its forces in Europe, reduces its military capabilities, and the Soviet Union remains here and weak there, you can see that that balance having changed, our negotiating position, our ability to play a great role in the world is infinitely weak. Our allies will lose confidence in us. The Soviet would lose respect for us. The Chinese would consider us no longer important to them. And our whole policy would come crashing down. So that's why we have to be for a strong defense among many other reasons. Not defense for the sake of defense, but defense so that the United States, which is the only nation in the world that can play the role of peacemaker, can play the role. I would simply add there that the others should play it. We think they could. But let's look around the world. Before World War II, we could sit back, speaking before the war, and say, well, we got the French and the British, and they were great nations, so they could play a role. Before World War I, the same. And the U.S. could come in later, no longer. Because in the present time, we face the stark fact that in the free world, we're the only nation that matters from a security standpoint. I don't mean to downgrade our British friends or our French friends with their many nuclear capabilities, but they know that. The Germans, of course, cannot have it, never can develop a nuclear capability, even though they are, of course, potentially very effective in the nation. And the Japanese, the only other economic power with that capability, with the economic power to develop a military capability, cannot be allowed to have it. Because they can be as dangerous as anybody else. And that we all know. So here we sit at this time with Europe, the new Europe, an economic giant, and a military and political pygmy. Because they're all scattered around here, and we're going to work with them, we're going to try to work out our economic problems for them to develop new policies toward Europe to strengthen the alliance and give it a sense of direction. But in terms of the security of that alliance, it's all right here. And so there's two of them, because, and they know that. And you look at Japan, the same. The Japanese, of course, they make their move toward the Soviet, they make their move toward the Chinese and the rest. But they are keenly aware of the fact that without the American alliance and the American nuclear deterrent, the Japanese would have to do one of two things. They either have to make a deal with the Soviet, or they have to go nuclear. And you see what that would do to the world. So we now try to put that all in the perspective of Latin America and bring it in. There's been a tendency for many, I think, to think that we were playing a big power game. We've talked to Tanaka, we've talked to Brezhnev, we've talked to Chiang Kai, and even to Pompidou and Eve and Braun and the rest. But we we don't really care much about our closest friends and neighbors. That isn't the case at all. Because they have our friends from the South and not the state, the things I'm talking about here. Because if the world should develop, should have been allowed to develop along down the tracks it was going in 1969, when we left the board, if that should happen, it would become a very, very dangerous world. And so what I am sent to say here today is that we've got to look at the whole picture. The United States first must maintain its military strength so that we can play a peacemaking role in the world between superpowers and keep our commitments so that the Europeans don't feel that they all have to go on a race to Moscow. And so that the Japanese don't feel that they have to do something and look at other options. That's why our position is so important. The United States, in addition to that, must think positively in terms of what we call the smaller, or shall we say, less prosperous countries, less rich countries. Here Latin America comes into play, and so forth. Here, Africa, and so forth. Latin America is the most important to us because they're our closest friends, our closest neighbors, and it's vitally important that we not allow that friendship to deteriorate. And here, of course, the economic game is the one we play primarily, as well as the political. But the economic game, that we do everything we can to reinforce our interest in Latin America, but also to find new ways to have them know that it's best for them to work with us rather than somebody else. Because, you know, Europeans are working in there, the Japanese are there, the French are in there, and so forth and so on. That's all right up to a point. But America must play, the United States must play the lead role without, of course, impinging upon the sensitivities and the lack of something. Very important. I will simply finish this presentation by saying, making one comment about the major danger spot that it is. We have no answers to that, but we're working on it. We're keenly aware of, and you should be aware of the fact that all the places in the world today that could risk a conflict between the major powers, this is the most likely candidate. You see, Vietnam, many of the people who wrote columns and the rest all said, not necessary to bomb and hide bomb and so forth. The Chinese were coming, the Russians, they're ever coming. Vietnam was not that important to either China or Russia. But the Middle East is that important to the Russians. And we know it, and they know it. So that's why, in addition to avoiding the conflict between the U.S. and Soviet there, not to mention the enormous problem of what's going to happen to the energy resources of Europe. Japan gets 90% of its oil from the Middle East, Europe 80%. You close it off, you can see what can happen. I'm not trying to build fears here in advance, because we may be able to, we hope we're going to be able to work the problem out over a period of time. I can assure you that it has the highest priority. So, in conclusion, I raise these other parts of the world not for the purpose of downgrading Latin America, but for the purpose of all of us seeing that we've got to play the whole world canvas. No nation can be an island anymore. The United States cannot be a fortress America. Could have been when Bobcat once suggested, but no more. And under these circumstances, we must play a role that is worldwide, that sees the whole world, not part of it. And that means getting along with people, with governments that we didn't feel we could before, with the Chinese, with the Russians. Finding a way that the new Europe does not have economic confrontation, a way that destroys our political alliance, political and military alliance. And with Latin America, of course, finding some new approaches that will constantly reassure them that despite our moves on the world scene, in fact, the that kind of sense to them. I find, for example, in my meetings with Latin leaders, after going through bilateral problems, you know, like this president of Mexico, so many interests, that they are very interested in what's happening in the world, too. They do not want to be parochial. No one really wants to be. So, I want you to know that your concerns on this subject will be certainly the deepest consideration, and I hope that you, on your part, will give us the support we need on the defense team and the other foreign policy area, because we can have the finest relations to make any difference if the United States becomes the second strongest nation in the world. That's the goal, Turkey.
Can I say just one more, Mr. President?
I'm
sure all of us were tremendously impressed by a very brilliant and comprehensive analysis of the world situation. Certainly, I, at least by myself, am full agreement with what you're saying and all the points. There are just two things that, in relation to our Latin American problem that Mike was saying. One, the very fact that these days we are identifying five major power centers of the world, namely the United States, Europe, China, Japan, and Soviet Union, and there's no question this is a fact, but this is also recognized by Latin America, and therefore I think they're saying to themselves, well, where are we? We used to be in a much more prominent position. And therefore, it seems to me that one of the problems we need to do is to find a new role for them in relation to us, so they will feel that they are of importance, perhaps in a different way, but nevertheless of importance in our esteem. And it seems to me this is one of the things that ought to be looked at, and that if our group can be helpful, we would like to. The second thing is that, to a considerable extent, the U.S. involvement in Latin America, as Petri said, is an economic one and is private economic. In other words, the $16 billion probably are the biggest U.S. stake in involvement. But the very companies that have that stake are under very heavy fire at the present time, not only in Latin America and other parts of the world, but in at home too, in our own Congress, as you well know, and among many other places. And therefore, we are fighting to some extent a defensive battle of our own. All the more, it seems to me, we need to find a role for ourselves, both with our own government and the Latin American governments, which is constructive and positive and acceptable, which I'm afraid at the present time it isn't. But here again, I think that we need the guidance of people in government and need close cooperation. And all I'm saying is I think this is another reason why Pepe's proposal could be tremendously constructive to us as representatives of multinational corporations, but also in relation to our role in Latin America and why I think that this does make sense. And it's true that in the past there have been times when groups similar to these have had a more organized relationship with government. Naturally, terribly pleased that you responded to it as you did, and I think it could be helpful.
Well, I want to be sure I haven't left you on a downbeat note. What I was really trying to point out is that in the world today, there are many danger spots, and there will always be, because it is not the nature of man, unfortunately. I'm sure you who's a straight idiot is the nature of man, but let me tell you, and unfortunately it's not, it isn't a man fight each other, or that's really what we're getting down to. But I would simply say that the world in terms of the long view is saving the chances for a peaceful world or an open world, much bigger than it was 4 years ago. And the greatest goal that I have with this 4 years is to make it more safe, or help and contribute to making it more safe. Your cooperation in this area will be extremely important. I always felt that we have really been able to get a handle.